Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. We're having a very interesting show today about a subject matter that everybody thinks about. Not too many people know enough about. Some have had personal experiences with this. And we're going to be speaking with an expert on this subject matter, a man who's written books on it, and he's here to talk about it, Richard Dolan. Welcome, Richard.
Hi, Peter. Thank you for having me on.
Sure. Well, let's disclose the subject matter.
Sure. Well, I'm a guy who writes about UFOs and government conspiracies and cover-ups, so there you go.
Okay. Well, this isn't... I don't think we need to talk about whether there are UFOs or not. I know there are probably a lot of people in denial of it, or, you know, if you haven't seen one, it's just hearsay and it doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. We've certainly had a lot of TV shows about it. It all seems to be fantasy. And yet, you know, there's huge body of information out there that makes it clear that there's something going on out there.
Absolutely. That's been my contention for many years now. I didn't always feel this way. Back in the 1990s, I was working on a doctorate in history here in Rochester, New York, where I live at the University of Rochester. I was doing standard Cold War studies, the presidency of Harry Truman, and so forth, and somehow stumbled into the UFO topic, and I did so in a way that really intrigued me, and it was simply through the discovery that, there were a whole bunch of government documents that appeared to take this topic seriously back in the 1940s and 50s, and indeed beyond. And all I wanted to know was not were UFOs real. I wasn't quite there yet. I simply wanted to know, to what extent is this a part of my country's history? Were national security leaders interested as it appeared? And if they were, did they ever stop becoming interested? And, what was basically the deal? Everyone has wondered about this at some point, just as you pointed out in the beginning of your intro here. And everyone's heard claims of cover-up. And I guess I was thinking, well, I'm studying American national security strategy of the 40s and 50s. Let's look into it. And that's when I got hooked. That was in the early 90s, I guess pushing 20 years now, and I've stayed in ever since.
And you have a couple, you have one book and then a number of other books under the same title.
Well, what I have, I'm working on a historical trilogy, and that is called UFOs and the National Security State. I wrote that first volume about a decade ago. That covers, it's a 500-page book. It covers straightforward historical narrative, really, of the UFO phenomenon, the cover-up, all the research associated with it from the early 40s to the early 70s. That book went through two editions. I finished a second volume a little over a year ago. That covers, that's a 600-page book, and that covers from the early 70s to the end of the Cold War, 1991. So that's where I'm at with the history right now. I've got a volume three in the works. I have just finished a different book. It's not part of that series, a book that I've co-authored. And it's been a project that I've just really come to love. And that's a look, see into the future, not into the past. We've called this book AD After Disclosure. Think of it as a what-if book. What if UFO secrecy were to end? If you believe, as I do, that there is a UFO phenomenon, and if you believe there's secrecy relating to the matter, well, then you might assume at one point that secrecy will be over. And my question is, well, how would that change the world if such secrecy were to end? Would it transform us, turn us upside down into something totally different? Would it be ho-hum, not such a big deal? These are the questions that we really tried to ask, and hopefully what we'll be able to do is start a good conversation. My co-author, incidentally, is a gentleman named Bryce Zabel, and he is the creator of the television show called Dark Skies, which ran during the late 1990s. Perhaps some people remember that. It was a very fine show, historical treatment of the UFO cover-up. Bryce and I discovered we were pretty simpatico in how we looked at things, and we decided to do this project.
Now, this after disclosure idea is very current because there's a new TV show called The Event.
That's right.
And I've been watching it, and my sense about after disclosure is, and I think part of the theme of the show is the president going to disclose this phenomenon with friendly beings or with unfriendly beings?
Right.
And I think that's probably one of the biggest questions. Well, I guess there are two questions, two problems here. One is, who are these beings anyway? And the other is the nature of the fragility of our population in dealing with change.
Right. Well, who are these other beings? This is, a question that no one is really going to be agreeing on. And already, even though the book is still 3 weeks away from being released, I'm already finding that websites and blogs are arguing over how we're interpreting that, and they haven't even read it. So, if you look through the history of what appears to be reasonably documented contact cases, you get a variety of types of entities that people have encountered. I am personally not convinced that we're dealing with one type of intelligence watching us. It might sound a little off the wall, but really, when you think about humanity at this point in our history, it seems very logical that we would be the subject of a lot of interest from any group that's able to get itself out here and take a look at us. I mean, look, we've gone in one century from being a society of horses and carts and wood to a society of integrated circuits and artificial intelligence and robotics, and we're about to leap right off the chart in terms of our own trajectory. We've reinvented ourselves. We haven't just gone through normal technological progress in the last 100 years. We've really been leapfrogging over ourselves. My feeling is that any observing intelligence is well aware of this, and I think we've gotten a lot of attention. I think that's what the UFO phenomenon is all about. It's my personal opinion. What we tried to do in this book is a couple of things. One, to understand why disclosure is something of a paradox, why it's impossible on the one hand, but why it's also inevitable. And it really is both. It's impossible in the sense that the secret keepers have really no incentive for honestly giving up any information pertaining to this. They have, I think, too much to lose, and this is why there has been secrecy for all of these years. But it's also inevitable that disclosure of some sort will come. And I think it's inevitable because, as I've sort of just been hinting here, time is not going to stand still. We're not going to be in the year 2010 for the rest of our lives. We're moving ahead, and the world of 2020 is going to look very different from how it does today, 2030, and so on. Between now and some point in the future when we have a disclosure, the question is, when will that point be? We're going to have the ability to know this. So my own feeling is, just based on logic, we're going to hit that point, and I think we'll hit it probably within the lifetimes of most of us listening here.
I think that part of it is that you can't keep something secret that everybody is aware of, and there might be so much more activity out there that everybody witnesses.
Yes, absolutely. And think of the technologies that we are developing right now to have a global conversation with each other. Look, it's only really 15 years that the Internet itself truly got going in a major way. It's only been 5 years since we've had YouTube. It's only been 5 years since we've had smartphones, really. Facebook is, what, 2-3 years that people have really been, and then MySpace before that. Social networking, about 5 years, in other words. So, in other words, it's only been in a very short period of time that we've been able to have massive communication with each other. And then smartphones themselves are going to be having, guaranteed within 5 years, HD video capability on them, if they don't even sooner. So, right now, if you were to see some strange event in the sky, you might have a good enough phone camera that you could capture it, but I don't know, my phone camera is fair, but it's not that great, and it doesn't take great pictures at night. But all of that's going to change in the next few years. And so I just keep thinking there are going to be new technologies continually coming out, probably something that we cannot even foresee is going to put us in the position where this secret's going to be forced out. And then what happens when it does? This is really the meat of our book. What will change in our society? And I think the short answer to that is everything. Everything is going to change, from our economics, our financial situation, our politics, our society, our culture, our scientific understandings, our religious outlooks. And all of these issues Bryce Zabel and I try to deal with in his interesting and honest a way as we could.
Well, it's what I find as a possibility for the future is that our world is so split tribally, tribal mentality.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everybody, you know, is against everybody. Everybody's afraid of everybody, and so there are all these, you know, political groups and religious groups that point fingers at everyone else. And what happens when there's a larger tribe, a more frightening, perhaps frightening tribe, that shows up, then perhaps our tribes merge.
Yes, exactly. I think that that's a very good point, something that we have wondered about in our book. You know, human nature. Now, maybe we're going to go through the great transformation in a few years. Some people say this. I'm not holding my breath on that, but who knows? But human nature as it is right now, people love to have something to have it as an enemy. they love
right,
it.
Right.
They say they don't, but they do.
Well, that's tribal thinking.
You know it. And so if there's some others, other people, other beings that are, that become known to us, the real question is, are they going to be friend or foe? Are we going to be friend or foe? And I don't have the full answer to that. I don't think anybody does. But I will say that I suspect there's a great deal of nuance to this answer. I'm not sure that they're all going to be beings of light and light brothers and sisters here to help us to move to the next level of awareness. And I'm not certain that they're all out to steal our souls either. So I think that there may be something a little more complex going on. And the irony of a disclosure is that in the aftermath of it, we may not be an awful lot farther along in understanding who these other beings are than we are today.
Maybe they're technologically advanced, and because there are different beings out there from different places, coming from different ethics, morality, perhaps there's a complex of issues having to do with their own good guy, bad guy, who's protecting us, who's not. And we end up with a great deal of politics around different ET beings.
Yeah, I like the way you're thinking on this, because this is, I think this is right in a very important way, that just because there's many people out there right now who argue that these other beings, because they're so advanced, they obviously have proven that they've moved beyond the need for warfare and aggression. And I'm not really persuaded by this logic at all. If we were to do our little time travel experiment and go back 3,000 or 5,000 years to some ancient human society and show them our laptops and our iPhones and all of our neat technology, our nice clothes and whatnot, well, they might look at us and think, wow, you guys have really figured it all out, haven't you? And you haven't blown yourselves up. You must have figured out a way to make nice with each other. And we would be looking at each other, probably not saying much, backing away slowly, and say, yeah, and keep the safety on that thing on, by the way.
We might be a lot more primitive than they are.
In certain ways, absolutely. Look, it was only 50, 60 years ago that Nazis had some pretty nifty technology. That didn't make them all that nice. You know, and technology in the military today certainly is incredibly advanced. That doesn't mean that it's being used for humanitarian and beneficent purposes, by no means. I think we need to get over these blinders that just because a species may be much more technologically advanced, that they've figured out answers to their social problems and a way to find peace and so forth. I'm not persuaded by that logic. They could, And you know, the other argument is that, well, they must be peaceful because they could have taken us over by now. They could have blown us up. True, except if you wanted to take over a world, why would you blow it up? You wouldn't want to trash the place necessarily. So,
well, they could also have arrived in great numbers with their technology, not to blow it up, but to take it over a long time ago.
Right, right. They could have, and maybe they're here. Maybe they live here.
Well, that's
all kinds of possibilities.
The TV show, The Event, the ETs in that show are very human.
Absolutely, and I just saw the new episode of The Event last night. I have to admit, I'm hooked. I wrote an article about The Event a few weeks ago, just before it aired, and I thought, you know, I really want to watch this show now.
Sure.
Well, there are many, many accounts within the history of contact literature of entities that look totally human, but they don't seem human. And so I've often wondered, if I were an alien and I were to want to interact with the people on Earth, I wouldn't really be able to do it while looking like an alien. So you would either breed your own humans and have them do work for you, maybe enhance them in genetic or technological ways, and then mix them into the society. Sure, I'd want to do that.
If that technology is that easy.
Well, if it is for them.
It might be. It might not be. It might, you know, they might not be able to do it in a way that blends in very nicely.
Well, hence that might explain some of the classic Men in Black stories, where these guys, warn UFO witnesses not to talk, but they seem really strange. They seem pasty white, and they seem to move in odd ways. And I don't know what to make of some of these stories, but I can say I don't mind speculating about it. No, I think the technology should be there, and if you were to breed your own little group of humans and put little nano chips in their brain to enhance whatever capabilities you want, I mean, I think why not? We're going to be at that capability ourselves as a society in the next generation or two. So as far as the event, though, it did show human looking non-humans, or human-looking aliens, I guess you could say, who, what's interesting about that show is that after the third episode now, these ETs, or these aliens, whatever, haven't really shown themselves to have extraordinary powers, as far as I remember. They seem very smart, I guess, but they seem just like human beings.
Well, they did take that airplane and move it in a different
right, but
place.
That's technology, perhaps.
Right,
might just
right.
Be. So it didn't seem like that they intrinsically were necessarily any different than we are, actually.
And so that's a possibility, and maybe it's an easy way to make this show work. But there is a question about, you know, where could beings be from? I guess anywhere. If they can travel through time and space in a way that we don't understand yet. And
right.
And also, you know, we have these crop circles going on around the world, especially in England.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unexplained. And
I agree. I think they are unexplained, yeah.
And nobody has figured out how they're even created. It's not like some UFO sits over a field
right.
and does something, because nobody sees that.
There are some pretty good crop circle hoaxers out there, or actually they don't call themselves hoaxers, they call themselves artists. And they've done some interesting work, but the problem with that is when you really look at some of the known created crop circles and you compare it with the mysterious ones, there's no comparison in terms of size, frequently, complexity, precision.
And speed.
And speed. That was the next thing I was going to say. These others, they come up, bam, overnight. No one sees them being made, like, ever? Ever? Well, I mean, it's the case. Southwestern England primarily, and also Ohio, not far from, like, you know, the Serpent Mound area. In other words, the Ohio crop circles, which is really where the best U.S. ones are, seem to be connected with the kind of ancient sites of the mound dwellers in the Ohio region. I don't know if there is a connection, but there may be one.
Well, there are a lot of patterns, and you've looked at those patterns. There are a lot more UFO sightings over strategic radioactive sites in the world.
There's definitely a connection, in my view, and in the view of other researchers, of UFOs with nuclear technology. Yeah, absolutely, yes, I think. People forget even the Roswell crash, whatever happened at Roswell in 1947. Roswell Army Airfield at that time was the only base in the world that had nuclear weapons, the only one. Something happened in the vicinity of that. In the immediate aftermath of Roswell, there were a number of airspace violations of very sensitive U.S. bases at Los Alamos, at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and Hanford, Washington. All of these were major nuclear technology sites, and all of them experienced overflights of objects that have been unidentified to this day, often round in form, displaying exceptional capabilities. Attempted jet aircraft intercepts failed. Anti-aircraft battalions, intelligence community memos, and all of this circulated as a result of this. And we don't know what these objects were. Through the 50s and 60s and 70s and beyond, we have accounts of UFOs interfacing with nuclear sites.
You know what actually is interesting to me, and I roll my eyes about it, are the futile attempts of debunkers.
Yeah.
And you know, they really can't debunk this. And in their efforts, one of the things that they might say is that the people who say that they saw these things don't realize that the intelligence and the advanced technology of this country is something they just don't know about. The thing is that these people who have seen these things are in that group of advanced technology people in this country. And they say, we don't know anything that works that way. And the debunkers say, well, you just weren't told about it.
Right. They like to fall back on the, well, we have our own secret technology argument. And in fact, we do have a lot of secret technology. Some of it can explain some UFO accounts. I don't think anyone's going to argue with that. You know, the thing that I often notice about the skeptical blogs and the skeptical arguments and the debunkers is how they make their case. And, you know, it's not that the believer camp is always immune to this. They're not. But I often really find that the skeptical websites and arguments very quickly resort to non-relevant areas of argument. Basically, they resort to name-calling. They do that a lot. Attack the witness, attack the writer himself or herself, rather than deal with the actual data. And
right.
I see this all the time, and it's a very effective technique of debate if you're just trying to shut someone up. You know, you just beat them over the head enough times.
And for an audience that might not understand what's going on.
Right.
You know,
right.
Some of these people say, well, the reason I'm right and you're wrong is that I'm smarter than you.
and just engaging in insults and innuendo. This is a tactic, of course, engaged for many, many years by the longtime leading debunker of UFOs, Philip J. Klass. He was notorious and famous for doing it. But really, you know, Klass is no longer with us, but there's a whole little school of little Klasses out there.
Right.
And they seem to have taken the lesson from the master. So, whereas, and again, there are UFO writers who I'd like to see become a little more detached in their analysis. But by and large, I feel that the UFO research community is fairly detached. They often do not engage in overreach with their data, and they simply try to stick to the facts. I often feel that the other side doesn't do that very much.
Well, there's more and more data all the time and more technology to help us, as you were talking about.
And even if you didn't want to argue about aliens per se, and by the way, I'm not emotionally committed to the extraterrestrial hypothesis regarding UFOs. I think that there could be a lot of possibilities, and I think that's one of them, yes. To me, the ultimate answer doesn't matter so much as getting on the table the evidence. And here's what I would say we can argue confidently. which is that there is a phenomenon out there which is not being explained. In other words, someone is flying something that is not supposed to exist. Now, and this has been going on for 70 years, essentially, maybe more, but certainly in our modern history. And this, I think, anyone can take to the bank. There is an overwhelming abundance of documentary evidence showing that the UFO phenomenon is real. It's real. And not only that, it affects national security, not just of the United States, but of nations around the world. We have military encounters, documented military encounters from around the world showing that military jets chase these things.
We also have astronauts who have admitted to that.
Absolutely, absolutely. We have the late Gordon Cooper, the man with the right stuff, talked about this many times before he passed away a few years ago. Dr. Edgar Mitchell, whom I've known for a number of years, I know Edgar personally, has spoken not about his own sightings, but about he has spoken about his own information that he has received at the highest levels, very elite levels of our national security community, which have confirmed to him, he says, the existence of deeply classified programs to study ET technology and bodies. And Edgar Mitchell has said this. Who's going to call him out as a liar? He's a good man, and I've spoken with him personally about this a couple of times. So, yeah, astronauts talk about this, and there's a number of other astronauts who do quietly believe in UFOs. They just don't like to talk about this thing publicly because it's a career killer. It's a career inhibitor. You know?
Well, I think it's important to keep this conversation alive in the world and put pressure on everybody to keep our eye on the skies and on the governments. And these books help, and the conversation is important to even allow people to believe in themselves when they see something.
Right. Well, think about how disconcerting it is that this incredible phenomenon that people encounter. Most witnesses don't even talk about it to friends and often to family. You know, we encounter this awesome, sometimes terrifying, sometimes traumatic experience completely isolated, and often for the rest of someone's life after they've had an encounter, they almost never talk about it. They try to shove it back in their mind. What does that say about us as a society, that we sort of prevent people from wanting to talk about this because they're afraid of being ridiculed? There's something not right there when you have a society that does that to itself. And so we have a choice, and the choice is we can truthfully examine and openly examine this great mystery, which I think promises to transform the very definition of what we think we are, or we can continue living in a matrix-like illusory reality.
And denial.
And denial, yeah.
So we only have about a minute left, so this is actually a good place to help people know where to go with their fears or their questions and go on the web and check out your site and your books.
Thank you. I would encourage people to check out the blog site that Bryce and I have going. It's a very active site. It's called afterdisclosure.com. Just afterdisclosure.com. Go there. It's got articles I've put up, Bryce has put up, links to my primary website, which is keyholepublishing.com. If you forget all that, just Google the name Richard Dolan. That's me. You'll find links to all of that stuff. And I'm easy to contact if someone wants to write to me. You can get me through my website. That's pretty easy.
Thank you so much for your dedication to the subject matter and all the work you've done.
And my pleasure.
And I really appreciate you being on Energy Stew.
Thanks very much, Peter.
All right. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. And I can be reached at Peter at HeartRiver, HEART, river.org. And thank you so much for listening.